Jayam Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Paravijakacharya Satatatri Srimad Divine Grace A.C. Bhakti Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Srimad Bhagavatam Grantaraj Ki Jai. All glorious humble devotees. All glorious humble devotees. All glorious humble devotees. All glorious Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Today we're reading from the glorious Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 7, entitled The Lord Shiva Saves the Universe. And we'll be starting from verse 32, but we will recite verse 26 for practice. As Srila Prabhupada said, it's transcendental sound vibration, and that we are making more spiritual advancement and we even know. He said that. Because Harishari told me that he was present when Prabhupada got the news that Bhakti Vilas Tirtha had died. Now Bhakti Vilas Tirtha was not a big fan of Srila Prabhupada. He tried to obstruct so much Prabhupada establishing. But he was So when Prabhupada heard the news, Prabhupada's immediate response was, he went back to Godhead. Because he had very much pleased his Guru Maharaj.
Yeah.
Pleased his spiritual master. And he responded, then he said to Harishara, he says, you do not even realize how much spiritual advancement you're making. You don't even realize. Because we think, you know, we're making a lot more than we understand. So we just keep doing it.
Yeah.
Just keep doing it. Huh? What is that?
26.
Yeah, 26. We're actually at verse 32, but we're going to chant verse 26. Please repeat it after me. Doesn't matter. Please repeat after me. Agnir Mukam Te Kila Devatma. Agnir Mukam Te Kila Devatma.
Water. First, water. Yes.
The boss. The boss. I have to get a t-shirt for him. The boss. What's that?
Sewing. Fixing.
Chitim.
Vidur.
Loka. Bhavangri. Pankajam. Chitim Vidur Loka Bhavangri Pankajam. Kalam Gatim Te Akila Devatmano. Kalam Gatim Te Akila Devatmano.
Other way.
Dishash Cha Karnao Rasanam Jalesham. Dishascha karnau rasanam jalesham.
Dishascha karnau rasanam jalesham.
Agnir mukam te kila devatma.
Agnir mukam te kila devatma.
Chitim vidur loka bhagavangri pankajam.
Chitim vidur loka bhagavangri pankajam.
Kalam gatim te kila devatmano. Ishascha karnaura sanam jalesham.
Ishascha karnaura sanam jalesham.
Agnir mukam te kilam devatma.
Agnir mukam te kilam devatma.
Chitim vidur loka bhagavan gri pankajam.
Chitim vidur loka bhagavan gri pankajam.
Kalam gatim te kila devatmano. Tishascha karnau rasanam jalesham.
Tishascha karnau rasanam jalesham.
Others?
Agnir mukam te kila devatma.
Agnir mukam te kila devatma.
Chitim vidur loka bhagavan
gri pankajam. You
want to you? Chitim vidur loka bhagavan gri pankajam. Kalam gatim te kila.
Kalam gatim te kila devatatmano.
Ishascha
karnau rasanam javesham. Agnir mukam te kila devatatmana.
Agnir mukam te kila devatatmana.
Chitim vidur loka bhavangri pankajam.
Chitim vidur loka bhavangri pankajam.
Kalam gatim te kila devatatmano. Ishascha
karnau rasanam jalesham. Agnir mukam te kila devatma. Tim vidur loka bhavangri pankajam. Kalam gatim te kila devatmano. Ishascha karnau rasanam jalesham. Please repeat after me. Agnihi, fire. Mukam, mouth. Te, of your lordship. Akila devata atmaha. The origin of all the demigods. Kshitim, the surface of the globe. Vidu, they know. Loka bhava, O origin of all planets. Angri pankajam, of your lotus feet. Kalam, eternal time. Gatim, progress. Te, of your lordship. Akila devata atmana, the total aggregate of all the demigods. Dishaha, all directions. Cha, and karnau, your ears. Rasanam, taste. Jala Isham, the demigod controller of the water. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. O Father of all planets, learned scholars know that fire is your mouth, the surface of the globe is your lotus feet, eternal time is your movement. All the directions are your ears, and Varuna, master of the waters, is your tongue. So now we'll go to the actually where we are, which would be 32. translation. When annihilation is performed by the flames and sparks emanating from your eyes, the entire creation is burnt to ashes. Nonetheless, you do not know how this happens. What then is to be said of your destroying the Daksha Yagna, Tripura Sura, and the Kalakuta poison? Such activities cannot be subject matters for prayers offered to you. Purport. Since Lord Shiva considers the great acts he performs to be very unimportant, what was to be said of counteracting the strong poison produced by the churning? The demigods indirectly prayed that Lord Shiva counteract the Kalakuta poison which was spreading throughout the universe. So again, it describes here, it says here that that he does not even know how the annihilation happens. It says, when annihilation is performed by flames and sparks emanating from your eyes, the entire creation is burnt to ashes. Nonetheless, we do not know how this happens. It's such an unimportant thing to him that he doesn't even know that it's taking place. It's he's not impressed by his own activity. Some people are very much impressed by themselves. We see that they become very puffed up. They think they're very important. Where Lord Shiva is not, he doesn't think that what he's doing is very important. As Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport. In an earlier verse, it says that Lord Vishnu, he was not aware of how the Brahman works. It says it is not. Not aware of how the Brahman effulgence is working, because then Srila Prabhupada explained that this is such an unimportant thing for him. He's not concerned, but he has his minions deal with such lowly matters. It's like we don't have to be aware. Srila Prabhupada gave an example that from nature study, by studying our own body, that we are not aware of how all the different functions take place. They just go on automatically, and we do our own work. 33. Exalted, self-satisfied persons who preach to the entire world think of your lotus feet constantly within their hearts. However, when persons who do not know your austerity see you moving with Uma, they misunderstand you to be lusty. Or when they see you wandering in the crematorium, they mistakenly think that you are ferocious and envious. Certainly they are shameless. They cannot understand your activities. So, so sometimes, there's in the previous canto, in the sixth canto, there was a whole section dedicated to Chitraketu, Maharaj Chitraketu, that he was cursed because he made some what Uma Devi thought to be unseemly remarks. He was flying in his Chitraketu was a pure devotee, and he was flying. He was the king of the Vidyadharas, and he was flying in his airplanes, and he happens to see Lord Shiva in an assembly of Vaishnavas, great sages, and on his lap, sitting there is his wife. So he makes a remark that this is so amazing. Like, he's amazed that Lord Shiva, the great transcendental personality, is sitting there with his wife. But he's making Lord Shiva didn't take it as an offense, because he could see, because Chitraketu was flying around the universe with a bunch of women. Well, he's surrounded by a bunch of beautiful women, his wives. He's got like 10 million wives or something like that. But he's also flying around with all these women flying through the universe. And he's a pure devotee. So he's making this remark about Lord Shiva. And it was joking. It was like a sort of a joke between two great transcendental personalities. That he's with this... Lord Shiva's only with one woman. Where he's with, he's got a whole airplane full of beautiful women. So he makes some remark that way. And then and Lord Shiva doesn't say anything. Nobody else says anything. But his wife, she takes great offense to it, and she curses Chitraketu that way. And then he comes and gets off his airplane, he, you know, pays his obeisances, he accepts the curse, and then Lord Shiva, he explains the whole situation. That actually he was, you know, there was no offense was made and this and that, but you know, you took it the wrong way, and blah, blah, blah. And then she felt very embarrassed. Because yeah, everybody else could understand what was going on except Uma Devi, because I guess she was a little bit extra cautious about the prestige of her husband. And that's the verse where Srila Prabhupada says that even in that the understanding of ladies is always, even in higher realms, is less than that of the men there. So the point being, though, is that sometimes it's misunderstood that here's Lord Shiva, that people make that he's always with his wife, that they make wrong conclusions about Lord Shiva, that he's lusty. They misunderstand you to be lusty. Just like they do the same thing with Krishna. They think that with Krishna, mundane people think that Krishna had so many wives, he was with the gopis. Even some Vaishnavas, they think, how is it that Krishna, if he's God, why he's with the wives of other people? Well, that Krishna did, that even Jiva Goswami, he had to perform the marriage ceremony. He had to convince some of his disciples that actually Krishna eventually married Srimati Radharani. Because they couldn't understand, they had this mundane morality, thinking that that this was some sort of a mundane activity that Krishna was doing. Isn't it? Dharmapran?
Yeah.
Right. So they misunderstand. Like Christians, missionaries who came to India, they are thinking that Krishna's activities, because he's with the gopis, and he had 16,180 wives, that these were indicating that how can he be God? He's with so many women. You know, they don't understand that Krishna, everybody belongs to Krishna. Let's speak of all the women. Everybody belongs to Krishna. One time, I think it was in Poland, that they were criticizing, even Poland or some other place, they were criticizing, the devotees were criticizing Krishna, saying that how can he have be married, be associated with so many women? But then, the devotee who was in the court, he knew something about Christianity. So he said, so when all the nuns in the convent, they all wear wedding rings. Right? So, it means that, what does it mean? It says all of these nuns are brides of Christ. That they're married to Christ. So how many nuns are there in the world? So they're all married to Christ. So then what are you complaining about Christ, Krishna? Jesus Christ has so many wives. If they're all the nuns are the brides of Christ. So they, you know, they caught them on the left foot that way, you know. And of course some people, they take, they use this as an excuse. They think they, because they're projecting their own lusty behavior on Lord Shiva or Krishna, then they've misunderstood what Lord Shiva and Krishna are doing, so then they begin to try to imitate that. That's because later, they, you know, Lord Shiva, he was able to drink the whole ocean of poison, but they'll say, well, you know, Lord Shiva, he smoked some ganja, so we'll smoke ganja, but they can't drink the ocean of poison. Right? They'll do like that. Or Krishna, he had so many girlfriends, we'll also have girlfriends, but they can't lift up Govardhan Hill. They only try to imitate, they don't follow. And also they're misunderstanding the activities of Krishna. Lord Shiva is the topmost Vaishnava. Vaishnavanam yata shambhu. It is therefore said, Vaishnavera kriya mudra vigne na bujhaya. Even the most intelligent person cannot understand what a Vaishnava like Lord Shiva is doing, or how he is acting. Because the Vaishnava is very grave, very deep in his thoughts. He's like, sometimes we would read in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda would go off and have private conversations. So we can only imagine what they must have been discussing. But they would have private conversations and nobody knows what they were saying. Very, you know, because they're planning out the whole Lord Krishna's and Lord Chaitanya's behavior has got so many multi-levels because they're geniuses, as described in the Nectar of Devotion, that Krishna's a genius. And the criteria that is used to define his genius is that by doing one activity, multiple purposes are fulfilled. So they're planning how to redeem the conditioned souls. That's what the whole material world is for, to reclaim all the conditioned souls, all the different leelas, all the different pastimes that the Lord performs are for that purpose, but they're also for his own internal purposes. You know, with Lord Chaitanya came also to relish the taste that Srimati Radharani has in her love for Krishna. But at the same time, he's also presenting the Yuga Dharma. So we cannot understand the very deep, the very deep nature of Lord Shiva. Those who are conquered by lusty desires and anger cannot estimate the glories of Lord Shiva, whose position is always transcendental. In all the activities associated with lusty desires, Lord Shiva is an implement of Atmarama. Ordinary persons, therefore, should not try to understand Lord Shiva and his activities. One who tries to criticize the activities of Lord Shiva is shameless. But, you know, not just Lord Shiva, there was one, who was that other, I think, other god brother of Bhakti Siddhanta, was it Vamsidas? Vamsidas Babaji, he was also a disciple of Gorkhasur Das Babaji, I believe it was. Anyway, so he would act in very to ordinary eyes, he would act in very strange ways. He would sometimes chastise his deities. He would sometimes do. He would threaten to break his deity's legs if they didn't take the prasadam and things like that. And so Bhakti Siddhanta would just send his disciples, you bring all this bhoga and everything for him, but don't stay there. You won't understand what he's doing, and then eventually you'll make offenses. So just go, you deliver the goods, and you come back. Because you cannot understand the depths of his devotion. And if you try, you'll make some offenses because he will be behaving in ways which we just cannot understand. So somebody who's on a, you know, like a, if a child sees the way an adult is acting, they won't understand what is the motivation. They won't understand many the things that they do. You know, with the speak of activities like Lord Shiva or great devotees, we can't understand how Krishna, you know, is doing things for us. It's sometimes people say, oh, Krishna's cruel, or the world is cruel. So Srila Prabhupada gave it an example. Now, one time when he was a householder, he saw this woman, the next door neighbor, the daughter, his neighbor's daughter-in-law was beating one of her sons. Mercilessly beating her son. So he sent his servant over to inquire what happened, why this was going on. So then he found out that the oldest son had had typhoid, and in typhoid, one of the symptoms of typhoid, even when after the fever breaks, as it goes through several stages, and even after the fever breaks, one of the stages is that all the intestines are all ulcerated. All ulcers. And if you eat any solid food, it will rupture your intestines and you die. Though you may look healthy externally, no more fever, But you cannot eat any solid food. You have to wait a few weeks after that goes by, then you can eat solid food. So what happened is that the mother was just feeding him, practically making him fast, and just giving him some liquid. And he was hungry. So he asked his brother, younger brother, get me some chapatis, give me some parathas. So the boy thought he's helping his brother, so he went and got some parathas. And then the mother, you know, here one son thinks that the mother is starving him, and the other one, when the mother found out that this boy was feeding the brother, she was beating him. She was beating him because she understood that starving the boy was going to save his life, and feeding him was going to kill him. But the children are thinking, my mother is starving me, and here I am, I'm bringing food to him, and I'm getting beaten. So they can't understand what the really is going on. They only seeing it from their own perspective. And it's like, Srila Prabhupada also makes the point that sometimes people think that they're going to be doing good for others. They're going to feed the poor, help the poor, people who are in the streets. Like that. We're going to, so just like this boy, he thought, I'm going to be helping somebody, doing a good turn, you know, and instead, I get beaten for it. So we may think we're helping somebody, but they're in that condition not by accident. It's not by accident that that person is homeless. Not by accident that that person is in the condition that they're in. Krishna's purposely doing it to that person, just like that mother was purposely starving her son, making him fast. He thought he's starving. She's saving his life. Because if he eats solid food, you die if you have typhoid. Whereas the other boy, he thinks, well, I'm going to be a very philanthropic. I'm going to fulfill his desire and give him food, which is actually the last thing, the worst thing that you could do for that in that situation. So it doesn't really help. So it's like the advanced devotees, we don't understand what they're doing, but here's just like this mother, that nobody could understand why she's starving one. I mean, the children could not understand it. Other individuals, the older people could understand, but not the children. So we're like that. We're ordinary persons. Should not try to understand Lord Shiva and his activities. Even personalities like Lord Brahma and other demigods cannot understand your position, for you are beyond the moving and unmoving creation. So for persons like Lord Brahma and other demigods, what to speak of us? Since no one can understand you in truth, how can one offer you prayers? It is impossible as far as we are concerned. We are creatures of Lord Brahma's creation. Under the circumstances, therefore, we cannot offer you adequate prayers. But as far as our ability allows, we have expressed our feelings. Well, the whole thing is that the Prajapatis, they're asking Lord Shiva, they're praising him, eulogizing him, and encouraging him to please drink up the poison which has emanated from the churning of the ocean of milk, and making, you know, basically telling him that it's nothing for him to do these things. This will be an inconsequential act for him to do. O greatest of all rulers, your actual identity is impossible for us to understand. As far as we can see, your presence brings flourishing happiness to everyone. Beyond this, no one can appreciate your activities. We can see this much and nothing more. These are the statements of persons on a very high, the Prajapatis, the demigods of the universe, and this is, they are just simply expressing their own inability to understand the greatness of Lord Shiva. So if that's their position, what to speak of ordinary mortals such as ourselves? When the demigods offered these prayers to Lord Shiva, their inner purpose was to please him so that he would rectify the disturbing situation created by the Halahala poison. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 7:20, Kamasthasthir Hita Jnana Prapadyante Nyadevataha. When one worships demigods, this is certainly because of deep-rooted desires he wants fulfilled by the mercy of those demigods. People are generally attached to the worship of demigods for some motive. So they're trying to, in one sense, one might say that they're trying to flatter Lord Shiva. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, Lord Shiva is always benevolent towards all living entities. When he saw that the living entities were very much disturbed by the poison, which was spreading everywhere, he was very compassionate. Thus he spoke to his eternal consort, Sati, as follows. So Lord Shiva is very compassionate, and he's also very easily pleased. That's why he's called Asutosh. He's very easily pleased by his devotees, those who will approach him. Lord Shiva said, My dear Bhavani, just see how all these living entities have been placed in danger because of the poison produced from the churning of the ocean of milk. It is my duty to give protection and safety to all living entities struggling for existence. Certainly it is the duty of the master to protect his suffering dependents. So Lord Shiva and his wife Bhavani, they are the basically real masters of the material universe. The demigods are basically bureaucrats who are controlling the different things. But it is Lord Shiva and his wife who are the real controllers of the material world. They are the jail keepers. So they are the masters. So they are compassionate when they see the struggling, everybody who's struggling in the material world. That's the whole nature of the material world, the struggle for material existence. We've been struggling for the same things for eternity. Yeah? Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. That's been going on since time immemorial. Everybody is trying to go to, it's the same problem, the same struggle was there in the past, the same struggle is going on now, the same struggle will going on in the future. Maybe try to satisfy it in different ways, but nothing is different. Everybody goes out, you hear all this traffic, all that noise, everybody's going to work, right? Why are they going to work? If they don't work, then they will feel a pain right here. It's called hunger. People go to school, going to university, going to school so they get a good job, so that they can it's all the belly filling problem, so that they can get enough money so that they can attract a suitable sexual partner. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. That's one of the desires of material life. You have to eat, other bodily demands. There'll be, for sex is there, because reproduction. And then we have to keep our body, we're all wrapped up, isn't it? We have to protect our body from the elements. We have buildings. All these different things are required in the material world. It's a whole, and to acquire all these things is a big struggle. And it's an unceasing struggle. It just relentlessly goes on and on and on. And people think, oh, this is the way of life. We should just be satisfied with that. They're trying to always solve these problems. confirmed. these problems, it's a whole economy. That they want to turn the economy around so that everybody becomes more affluent, so that these problems are solved with a lot less struggle, with as little struggle as possible. That's the struggle for material existence. But that's not the real problem. These are the problems which the animals face. Animals are doing the same thing, because we're just a royal edition of the animals. They eat, we eat. They sleep, we sleep. Everything that we have very elaborate water beds and honeymoon suites. The dogs are just doing it in the street. But it's the same program. Same program. So if that's all we apply our energies to, solving, trying to solve the struggle of material existence, then we're no better than the animals. And we've actually misusing the facility which we're given. Right? If we just use it for that. Suppose you have a calculator, an ordinary hand calculator, a notebook computer, and a supercomputer. Right? And you use... But if you use your notebook computer or your supercomputer for just the notebook, just for the calculator function, right? Why do you need such a sophisticated, expensive computer to use the calculator function? Would you buy, if your employee was only using the calculator function of this big computer, you'd take away the big computer and you'd hand them a calculator, right? Or if your kid was just using you bought them a big computer and you see them using the calculator function, would you be happy with that? It's a complete waste of money. So you take away the computer and you give him a calculator. So if Krishna sees that we're simply using our very sophisticated human body for doing things which just animals can do, then what happens in the next life? The human body will be taken away from us. Human body is... Animals do not acquire karma. Animals just wear karma off. In the human life, we are on a plateau, or you could say where the stairway is going up, and one stairway is going down, where we make a choice whether we want to go up or down. Do we want to simply waste our time trying to simplify the struggle for material existence, which is impossible. It's impossible because that's why the material world is designed to be a place of suffering. Part of that suffering is this struggle, constantly struggling continuously to fulfill these different bodily demands, one after the other. It just never gives up. Or we can try to solve the real problems of life, which are birth, death, old age, and disease. These are the real problems of life, not the economic problem. That's not the real problem of life. The real problem of life is birth, death, old age, and disease. So if we utilize our human intelligence to try to solve that problem, then we're making real progress. You can shut the window. That would probably be a big improvement. Temporary problem. But he's going to solve it. People in general, being bewildered by the illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are always engaged in animosity toward one another. But devotees, even at the risk of their own temporary lives, try to save them. Thank you, Prabhu. That makes a big difference. People in general, being bewildered by the illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are always engaged in animosity toward one another. But devotees, even at the risk of their own temporary lives, try to save them. This is the characteristic of a Vaishnava, Paradukha Dukhi. A Vaishnava is always unhappy to see the conditioned souls unhappy. Otherwise, he would have no business teaching them how to become happy. Srila Prabhupada, he took so much risk coming to the West at his very advanced age of 70, suffering two heart attacks on the way here. He was, as he said, loitering in the streets of New York for a year. Described as loitering. I heard one conversation, he said he knew all of New York City. He didn't have anything to do, so he just went all over New York and just observed people, just watched people.
Yeah.
Just, you know, knew all of Chinatown, you know, all the different parts of New York City, because he had, was just loitering, observing people. And he took great risk for our own benefit, for our benefit. That's the nature of the real nature of the devotees, is they're always trying to figure out how to bring back the conditioned souls to Krishna. That's when Chitraketu Maharaj was praying to Krishna, he mentioned that the Lord feels his greatest victory. And sometimes we think that the Lord feels victorious, like when the Sringadev killed Hiranyakashipu, or when Ram killed Ravana, the Lord thinks this is his great victory. But that's not, Krishna does not consider that a victory. Chitraketu explains that the Lord considers it a victory if he can just reclaim one soul. That is a great, that's written down in his book, a great victory today. I reclaimed one soul back to him. So Krishna considers it a great victory if he can reclaim one soul. So therefore the devotees are trying their level best to help reclaim more souls on behalf of Krishna. Isn't it? That's what we're trying to do. So even at the risk of their own temporary lives, they are trying to save them. Materialistic life is therefore compared to samsara dhavanala, a blazing forest fire that automatically takes place. Lord Shiva and his followers in the parampara system try to save people from this dangerous condition of materialistic life. This is the duty of the devotees following the principles of Lord Shiva and belonging to the Rudra Sampradaya. There are four Vaishnava Sampradayas, and the Rudra Sampradaya is one of them, because Lord Shiva, Rudra, is the best of the Vaishnavas. So the Rudra Sampradaya, those are currently found in India in the what is known as the Vallabha Sampradaya. In fact, Sumati Morarji, the owner of the Jaladuta, who sponsored Srila Prabhupada to come to the West, was in that Sampradaya. It follows the Rudra Sampradaya. See, unlike other traditions, you know, like in Christianity or in Islam, where different branches are always they're at odds with each other, and sometimes they're very unpleasant histories where they killed each other, 100 years war and so many different wars, like shortly after the disappearance of Hazrat Muhammad, there was, I think after the time of Ali, his son-in-law, then there started bloody civil wars, hundreds of thousands of people killing each other, fighting with all different sects in Islam, fighting each other, and same thing in Christianity. But unlike that situation, amongst the Vaishnavas, there's cooperation between the different sampradayas. Right in Bangalore, right next door, is a temple run by the Sri Sampradaya. We're like this. We're very close friends. Or when we first came to India, so certain castes, the caste Brahmins were criticizing us that we're not bona fide. So we went to the different other sampradayas, like in Sri Rangam, one Rangaraj Bhattar, he was the head priest. He wrote a letter on our behalf that we are, because he's from the family of Gopal Bhatta Goswami, from that same lineage, from the house where Gopal Bhatta Goswami was born, where Lord Chaitanya stayed. So they wrote a letter that ISKCON is bona fide. Then they went to the Madhva Sampradaya. They also wrote a letter, Vishwesha Tirtha Maharaj, Pejwar Swami, ISKCON is bona fide. So there's cooperation. See, Sumati Maharaji, who's in the Rudra Sampradaya, she sponsored Srila Prabhupada to come to the West. On her boat, she came to the West. Prabhupada came to the West. So the different Vaishnava Sampradayas are always cooperating with each other. There may be some slight variations in certain philosophy, basically more having to do with the destination that they want to go to. Like in the Sri Sampradaya, the desire is to go to Vaikuntha. And in the Balava Sampradaya, they're worshipping more Krishna as a child. Whereas we are our destination, we want to enter into the Parakiya Rasa. Like that. So we have a different destination, so there's slightly different protocols are there. But there is basically cooperation with all the sampradayas together. There's no animosity, what to speak of, wars, killing each other, blowing up. They blow up, who's blowing up the mosques in Pakistan? It's not the Hindus. It's other Muslims blowing up. The Shias are blowing up the Sunni mosques. The Sunnis are blowing up the Shia mosques. Like that, it's sad, very sad. But that's not what happened with the Vaishnavas. They're not doing that. You can go in any Vaishnav, any other Sampradaya, and you'll be welcome as a devotee. So, any questions? Comments? Criticisms?
Fantastic.
Huh?
Fantastic.
Huh?
Glorification.
What is he saying?
Glorification.
So, Mataji, any questions? Taking some notes there. Okay, so Prabhu tomorrow is going to be 40.
Chai. All right.
Not 27.
Well, I was thinking because it was such a short one, and then about 5 verses later, so that's the one you did. That's your best.
I'll be 40.
40.
Does anybody have a question? All right. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
He has a question.
What's the question?
Maybe just two or three tips, if that's not too many, just to how we can, two or three tips on maybe how we can always be mindful that we may not understand what the Vaishnava is doing. Like, we don't understand what Lord Shiva is doing. We don't understand what, Nityananda and Mahaprabhu are doing when they're talking. So that we don't judge them, so that we don't use our basis, our own mind. What's that word called when we think the world is, when we think others are
Atmavan,
like...
Atmavat manyate jagat.
Yeah. So that we don't fall into that, so we can always respect others and...
Well, we have to be a bit careful that, see, like Lord Chaitanya said in regards to Nityananda, that even if he marries a Muslim's daughter or goes into a liquor shop, he is worshipable. But that might apply to, you know, it depends upon who the personality is. If I go into a liquor shop, you should have questions. You know, but the Lordship, it depends upon who that personality actually is. You can't, if it's some ordinary, lower level devotee, maybe some real questions should actually be raised. And if you see me walking into a liquor shop, you should start asking questions. You know, what was I doing there? And maybe I was just going in to get some boxes. You know, so I have done that, going in to get some boxes so I can move. But if you see some devotee walking out of a liquor shop, you, the doubts might be there. Legitimate doubts might be there, because we've seen in the past that devotees on our level have fallen down, gotten in trouble. I was just hearing a conversation with Srila Prabhupada about one of our godbrothers who was the GBC in Germany, and who was wanting to become a guru even in Srila Prabhupada's presence. So Prabhupada was speaking with him about it. And so then later he actually did become a guru, but then he unfortunately did get involved in intoxication, and while intoxicated he had machine guns and he accidentally killed a cow, and then eventually was excommunicated. So we have to be careful how we, sometimes there's this whole philosophy is, not to criticize. So that's only in the case of, brand name, like somebody like Lord Shiva, that's Lord Shiva. So if we see other strange things going on, perhaps we should actually raise some doubts, some questions. Because there's, sometimes people say that we shouldn't criticize, but that becomes like a criminal's utopia, that you can do whatever you want to do and no one will say anything because they're afraid they'll offend you. Right? Because I don't want to offend that person while he's ripping you off or while he's doing nonsensical things. So that becomes, this becomes foolishness then. So it's a fine line. Each case has to be judged independently. Lord Shiva is Lord Shiva. I'm not Lord Shiva. You're not Lord Shiva. You're not Lord Brahma. it has to be seen very carefully. And not to, one of the problems in ISKCON is to, which has caused havoc, is to consider ourselves to be a lot more advanced than we actually are. We're devotees. When Srila Prabhupada uses the word devotee in the Bhagavatam, he's not meaning somebody like me. He means somebody like Arjuna, Yudhishthir, Kunti, Dhruva Maharaj. What does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita? My devotee never falls down under any circumstances. I think in the history of ISKCON, if you delve into it, there are plenty of people who made mistakes. Would you say so, Dhammaprana?
Yeah.
He didn't have to think about that. that's what happened, because we're just on the entry level coming in. So we have to be, not that we go out of our way to criticize, but we should be careful. Like there was one case in New York, in Brooklyn Temple. Bali Mardan, who was a sannyasi, he got roped in by this one woman who claimed to be, I think, the Toyota heiress. Mm-hmm. Right? Anyway, he ended up leaving his sannyas to marry this woman, and ended up, she had nothing to do with it. She was just some Japanese lady. Anyway, they were having, I don't remember exactly the details, but they were offering chicken to the deities. Is that right? And so then, Srila Prabhupada, he was furious with the senior devotees for not making a commotion. But to the junior devotees, he didn't, because they were just, you know, they were just junior. But senior devotees said they should have immediately put a stop to it. The junior devotees, they, you know, they don't know what's going on, so they're, you know, they're not responsible. But more senior devotees, they should have immediately, you know, put a stop to that. You know, so then Srila Prabhupada didn't put it, he put a stop to it, but he criticized them for not saying anything. When you see something like that going on, it has to be, you know, immediately stopped. So sometimes there are many histories in ISKCON where nobody wanted to say anything, because ultimately they were afraid. So they, like at the around 1958, after Khrushchev became, I'm going to explain why this kind of thing happens. So after Khrushchev, he after Stalin died in 1953, Khrushchev became the head of the Soviet Union, and he began a whole process of de-Stalinization. And then he gave gave one speech at one of the conferences that went on for hours, just saying all the bad things about Stalin. So then somebody asked, well, when all these, Stalin was doing all these terrible things, why didn't you say something? Why didn't you object? And then Khrushchev said, who said that? There's complete quiet. No, the complete quiet says, that's why I didn't say anything. I also was afraid. Because anybody who objected, they also got executed. They got executed. That is like, if you want to understand the situation in the country, just listen to the humor of the country. So I'll tell you a Russian joke. So, Comrade Stalin, he came to one place and he was saying how this year the milk production was up 22%, and the wheat production was improved by 17%, and, you know, sunflower seeds increased production by 15%, and he went on and on and on like this. And, you know, the Soviet Union is going, you know, like this, is really giving a big speech. And then, any questions? He said, and then went in the back, you know, Ivan Ivanovich raised his hand and says, what's your question? He said, well, actually, Comrade Stalin, actually, there has not been an improvement in milk production. It went down a little bit. And he was, you know, what's the explanation? And Comrade said, well, actually, I have to go to the next program. I'll answer you next time. Mm-hmm. Like that, you know. So a year later, Comrade Stalin comes to the same place, and he gives a whole speech about this and that. You know, then any questions? And like somebody at the back says, yes, what's your question? Where's Ivan Ivanovich?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
They just disappeared. Tens of millions were executed. Mm-hmm. So that's why people they were afraid. Somebody is, you know, in a big position and they're going off. Nobody wants to say anything. Or they're doing something a little bit deviant. Nobody wants to say anything because they have supporters, or they're doing big, and then, boom. You know, Kirananda had the palace of gold. So people just have to be very careful. So sometimes people don't say anything, not because it's out of fear of criticism or ridicule or retribution. But there are things should be said. Things should still be said, because eventually the truth comes out. That was one point. Any other?
No, that was good. Thank you very much. I definitely got a few points.
But you know, miraculously, things are still going on, by the mercy of the 5-man GBC. You know the 5-man JBC? Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita, the Panchatattva, that's the only 5-man JBC that I trust. That's the 5-man JBC that I trust.
That's a good one.
Put my full faith in them. It's only because their movement. They are the ones who are directing this whole thing. Their prediction, it's going to come true. Whether ISKCON does it, whether ISKCON fulfills their goal or not, somebody will fulfill it because it will come true. It's going to happen. They will make it happen. Whether we get the credit, what did Krishna say to Arjuna? They're already dead. You just take the credit. If you don't, somebody else gets the credit. But they're already dead. They've already been killed. In fact, Arjuna, I think it was just right after the Drona Parva, or was it the Karna Parva? I think it was after the Karna Parva. Can't remember which one. Anyway, Arjuna was saying to Krishna, I'm seeing before me, in front of my chariot, a man running, going before, and from him thousands and millions of arrows are going out and it's killing everybody. Who is that personality? And Krishna, that's Lord Shiva. I told you everybody's already dead. You're just the instrument. But, you know, I've already arranged for everybody to be killed. So it's going to happen. So we just have to decide if we're going to be helping or hindering Lord Chaitanya. Did you have a question? Comments? All right then. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.